Senate Finance and Claims will come back to order from our recess earlier today. First up, Representative Carlson, House Bill 37. We'll open the hearing on House Bill 37. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, Committee, for the record, Jennifer Carlson, House District 69, here today with House Bill 37, which you all just saw on the Senate floor this morning. This bill, just in order to stay with strictly within the fiscal note, I would like to mention that I would suggest that some of the other reforms that have already passed through this legislature, and I expect to be signed if they have not been already, will help the department continue their downward trend of the number of children in their system, which would hopefully in the next few years work to lower some of these numbers. I know that you can't do that on a fiscal note, as you have to use the numbers for today, but I do want to say that I think it's important that some of these reforms should be lowering the numbers in this fiscal note. I do also want to mention that the numbers in this fiscal note that include the expenses for counsel for children who are participating in these proceedings is also included in another bill, which has passed through this body, this committee. That would be Senate Bill 148. And I just, I think you might have a copy of it on your desk for reference, but I just wanted to put that out there because you've already approved that amount of money through this committee. That amount of money has already been approved through House appropriations through House Bill 37. So it is in both fiscal notes. I'm not sure how the appropriations committees manage that. I'm guessing you get to the bottom of the page and notice that it's this, you've already put it in there once. So I would ask that you consider that when you're looking at the cost of this bill. Then without talking too much about the policy, you just heard about the policy, I just want to say one thing about why this bill is important. Because most of the cost is for obtaining the warrants that are required in this bill. If a child is to be removed when the situation is not an emergency, the policy is that the department uses active efforts to see if there's a way to keep the child safely in their home if it is a case of poverty-related issues. And if not, then the warrant is required. And the big portion of this is for that, and I would also suggest that that number has been estimated on the high side, which is probably logical. But I would suggest that as the department goes through the training and the gets the experience in writing warrants, that time frame would go down, and then also the fiscal note adjusted downward in relationship to the warrant. So I'm not going to say any more. I'll wait for questions. But this policy is being implemented because the Constitution requires it. People have a right to be secure in their persons, and that includes children. Children have constitutional rights, which includes being represented by competent counsel when they are in front of a court. And so these policies have been worked on for 2 years by an interim committee, and I would urge you to accept this fiscal note and pass this on to third reading. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Are there proponents for the bill? Any proponents in the room? Seeing none. Katya, are there anybody on the Zoom for this bill at all?
Mr. Chair, we only have an informational witness from OPD on Zoom. Nobody else, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. Are there any opponents in the room?
Good Afternoon, I guess, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Erica Johnston, J-O-H-N-S-T-O-N, Human Services Executive Director for the Department of Public Health and Human Services, and we rise in opposition to House Bill 37. House Bill 37 represents a significant investment that will operationally make wholesale changes to the way that we do our work, and that wholesale change does come at a cost. So I really want to walk you through the fiscal note assumptions specific to DPHHS so that you can understand what's in the bill that is driving those costs. So on assumption number one, if you have your fiscal note, House Bill 37 limits the removals that would not require a warrant to only those where a child is likely to experience sexual or physical abuse in the time it would take to obtain a warrant. Those terms are specifically defined on page 7, line 9, and also on page 9. And there's nothing in this bill that supersedes that requirement. So if there were any other situation where we would want, where we would need to make a removal, say, as a result of neglect or parents unavailable to parent because they're strung out on drugs, we would still need to have a warrant for removal because those children are not at imminent risk of sexual or physical abuse. Those terms are narrowly defined, and anything other than that would require a warrant. So if you turn to page 2 of your fiscal note, the warrant process itself is operationally very different from the work we do today. It would be new work on top of existing work that's already federally required and would be subject to timeframes that don't displace the work that we're federally required to do. So making a wholesale operational change to the way that we conduct business comes at a cost. And that cost, even if the work to write a warrant happened during a normal working day, the work that that warrant process displaced still has to be done. So it really just extends the amount of work that a child protection specialist would have to do, and that has to happen either 8 to 5 Monday through Friday or after 5 p.m. or on weekends. And so when you add a significant amount of work to an already overloaded system, it comes at a cost, opportunity to cost, resulting in significant overtime. In assumption number 3, this is where it really gets to the meat of how many removals may require a warrant. So in assumption 1, we already determined that only situations where a child is at imminent risk of physical or sexual abuse would require a warrant. We only remove in 6% of our substantiations for those reasons. So all other 6% of sexual abuse and 8% involving allegations of physical abuse. So 14% of our removals would not require a warrant, and 86% of our removals would require a warrant. I think you may have heard testimony on the floor today that allows the agency to use some discretion about when that warrant process would exist, but there's nothing in the bill that says other cases, other situations would not require a warrant. In fact, page 19 of your bill sort of doubles down on the requirement of a warrant in every instance besides physical or sexual abuse. You can see in assumption number 3, the number of removals and the timelines that we anticipate it would take to obtain a warrant. I think it's important to understand that the warrant process is different for each judge and jurisdiction. There's no requirement in the state of Montana that judges even in the same counties use the same process. So while a warrant may be issued in writing, by telephone, or electronically, there's no guarantee that any specific judge in any jurisdiction would accept one or the other or all of them, and we have no way of anticipating in advance which judges would accept an electronic application versus which ones would accept a telephone application, or even which judges would answer the call at 2 a.m. when we are needing to remove a child because a parent has been arrested and that child is no longer at risk of physical or sexual abuse. So that's really the driver behind assumption number 3, which is the largest cost for DPHHS in this fiscal note. Assumption number 4, warrant writing is a new process for CFSD. I think it's reasonable to assume that we would have to train our existing staff. It's also important to note that many different parties may remove a child, including law enforcement. However, House Bill 37 would require law enforcement also to get a warrant to remove a child. Just simply being a peace officer, a county attorney, or a sheriff doesn't remove the requirement to obtain a warrant. These cases that are filed for dependent and neglect cases require very specific language to be included in all steps of the process in order to maintain our ability to receive Title IV-E federal reimbursement. So we would need to train all of our partners and stakeholders across the system on what that language would need to be in the warrant. Otherwise, we can't claim federal 4E reimbursement if the child's removed and we incur costs for that placement.
Ms. Johnson, you're going to have to wrap it up because we have three other meals to get here.
I'm almost done. So I just wanted to make sure that you understood that the drivers in the bill that drive the cost for child and family services, this bill was written in response to an audit at a time we had 4,033 kids in care. We've been able to safely reduce the number of kids in care to 2,530. House Bill 37 represents a significant investment to fix a system that is actually currently stable. And I think the result of that would to create an unstable, revert back to an unstable system where people don't know what they're doing or what the requirements are. And I would suggest that this isn't the right time or the right investment and urge a do not concur.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Further opponents?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Nanette Gilbertson, and I represent the Montana County Attorneys Association here to oppose House Bill 37. The Montana County Attorneys Association opposed this bill during the interim. We've opposed it throughout the session, and we're here now to oppose it regarding the fiscal note. Currently, we have some pilot programs that are working on 5 business days for the EPS hearing. Yellowstone County is one of those, and they reviewed all of their cases from 2022, and in 28% of those cases, there was no counsel for the parent at the EPS hearing within 5 business days. So if House Bill 37 changes that timeline and we end up at 3 days, I don't see how we are possibly going to be to a point where OPD can assign counsel, regardless of the investment that this fiscal note has. So with that, we'd encourage you to do not concur. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gilbertson. Further opponents? Seeing none, informational witnesses. Ms. McLaughlin.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, Beth McLaughlin for the Judicial Branch, and I can answer questions about our portion of the fiscal note.
Thank you. Further informational witnesses in the room. Informational witnesses online. Katya, anybody?
Sir Chair, we have Mr. Smith online, and I'll go ahead and promote him.
Great. Mr. Smith.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. Brian Smith, Public Defender Division Administrator from the Office of the Public Defender, here if they have any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Any questions from the committee? Senator Baldwin.
Thanks a lot, Mr. Chair. I think my question is for, I guess, DPHS.
Ms. Johnston.
Hi. Thanks, Mr. Chair, Ms. Johnson. So my question is in regard to the assertion that this would require a lot of training. So I would assume, and you can correct me if you're wrong, that your caseworkers in each DPHS region already has training on the criteria to remove a child from his or her parents. And so if they're already trained on the conditions that would allow them to remove a child, why couldn't the department just create a checklist to go down that they can then read to the on-call magistrate, just like we do in DUIs and any other case when we just give the judge the list of reasons that and facts to base the warrant on?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bowman, so I actually think that training our staff on what the warrant process is, why it's required, the changes to the law, and how they could best implement this and be informed CPS workers for the work that they're doing and not simply just refer to a checklist and not know why it exists or what it's for or what the purpose is. I would suggest that that's not good casework and good practice. And so assumption number four is training our existing staff. We would then incorporate the warrant training in the new staff hire for future years, and that would just be rolled into our existing staff time. So the training costs are about our existing staff so that they can understand the importance of the work that they're doing.
Can I ask a quick follow-up,
Mr. Chair? Quick follow-up.
Thanks a lot. So I guess just to follow up, I would assume, and if this isn't the case, that the caseworkers are already trained on the conditions that allow them to remove a child from a home. The warrant requirement just allows a third-party independent person to overview that decision. So I don't understand why there would need to be new training.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bowman, because writing a warrant and requesting a warrant and receiving a warrant is not something that we do right now, and so a staff would have to be trained on the warrant writing process, how those requests are made in the jurisdictions that they're in, and what needs to be included and what they can expect from the process. I think that would be reasonable to expect.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions, Representative, you care to close?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I want to mention a few things. I really tried to stick really close to the fiscal note, but I feel like I want to answer a couple of things that were said. One is that if parents are strung out on drugs and putting their children at risk, we can't remove them because the child is not at risk of being physically abused. And I would just like to answer that by saying, if a child is strung out on drugs and their children are being neglected and in danger, that person should be arrested of a crime of criminal endangerment of child, in which case a law enforcement officer would be able to take that child and put them in a safe place. And so that's a false argument against this bill. As you see, the 86% of cases would require a warrant. That means that those children are not at risk of imminent physical or sexual abuse. The current law says that the department must make efforts to keep a child in their home, and if there is a need to remove that child, those 5 hours of waiting for a warrant could take place during the time that we are determining if the child could be kept in their home, which is currently what the practice and the law is. And so that doesn't change. So that 5 hours, which is the bulk of this fiscal note, could tick down during that period of time where that determination is being made. Also, we learned, and you probably know from other areas, that judges cover for each other on these warrants. And even in the part of the fiscal note that is the judicial branch, these warrants take approximately 20 minutes of judicial time. And so I would suggest that the very high estimate is a very high estimate. Law officers must get a warrant. That was stated. But that's not new law. We're not making a new law that says law enforcement has to get a warrant. That's how America works. There was a statement that this would put a wrench in the way that the system is, the curve is going down. But as you know, that in 2014, the curve was at 1,400 kids in care, and we went up to 4,000 kids in care, and now we're down to 2,500. So a lot of that difference is because COVID had kids out of the arena of mandatory reporters. And so the number went down a little bit, or maybe you could say significantly, because these children during COVID were at home and they weren't in places where there were mandatory reporters with CPS involvement. And so I don't think we can really use that. But my point being, we still have 2,500 kids in care, which is double the amount we had in 2014. And it is the top of the country in per capita children, in the top five forever. And we need to fix that. We need to fix this. Most other states require judicial oversight. So the fact that it's going to cost us a little bit money to catch up to the rest of the country is something that we just need to bite the bullet and get it done.
Representative, you have to wrap it up. We have a hard stop in a half an hour and three more bills to hear.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. I would Last thing I want to say is on the 3 days, that doesn't go into effect until 2025. The legislature meets before that would happen, and there would be an opportunity for the legislature to review that. Mr. Chair, if I might just indulge you for 1 minute of your time, I'm closed on this bill. I cannot explain to you how incredibly embarrassed I am by something I said this morning. I used a term that I had no idea what it meant. It's not how we use it where I'm from. I was just informed, and I'm hideously embarrassed, and I apologize to the committee. And with that, I will let you move on to your next bill.
Apologies accepted. This closes the hearing on House Bill 37. Representative Knutson, are you ready? I don't see Senator Representative Keenan yet. We'll open the hearing on House Bill 364.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Casey Knutson, K-N-U-D-S-E-N. I represent House District 33 up on the High Line. Bringing before the committee today House Bill 364. It is restructuring how DEQ goes about reviewing subdivision applications. I am by no means an expert in this, so I will let the experts speak. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Proponents of the bill, be as brief as you can. We're under pressure here.
No problem. Mr. Chair, Chris Dorrington, D-O-R-R-I-N-G-T-O-N. I'm the Director of Montana DEQ. Because of the speed at which you guys are working, you do not have the revised fiscal note. I'd be happy to pass that out if you don't
Great.
Mind.
Great. That'd be wonderful.
Quick. Very briefly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as you receive this, if you turn to page 2 and look at net impact to fund balance, the revised fiscal note is roughly $9,600 a year. As a result of lots of hard work, including members of your committee, we agree in the bill and in terms of the bill. We know that subdivision review files are going to increase by year average of 6.7%. And we also anticipate triggering the private option for some reviews, all contained in the assumptions. Again, the net effect is about $10,000 a year to this to the bill on a fiscal note, all to the positive. So I will sit for questions.
Thank you, Director Dorrington. Further proponents? Further proponents? Seeing none. Is there anybody online? Katya? We got him. Yeah. Time today. So any opponents in the room? Opponents? Informational witnesses? Seeing none, questions from the committee? Some of us didn't get the fiscal note, but I guess we'll take your word for it. It's much better. Seeing none, Representative, would you care to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. As you, you'll see with the fiscal note, it got cleaned up quite a bit, amended in over here in the Senate. It's a good bill. I close.
Thank you. This closes the hearing on House Bill 364. Let's open the hearing on House Bill 45. Representative Keenan, are you still in the room? We'll open the hearing on House Bill 722. Speaker Regeer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Matt Regeer, representative for House District 4. It's R-E-G-I-E-R. I'll stick to the fiscal note. The policy of this has passed both the House and the Senate. If you look on the fiscal note, page 202, number 3, expenditures currently managed under one program, and it says it'll take more for 22 additional programs. And this being my exact point, there is no new district courts. This district court council made up of 5 judges that still appropriates the money. All we're saying is, hey, tell us what you're spending on each district and let the legislature approve that. There's not any new districts. I'm hoping that the way the district council did it before was that they had a budget for each district council instead of taking it as a whole and just throwing money where they need to throw it. I think it is good policy, as both chambers have already said. The fiscal note, which once again, I think it should be zero. I think they should have this information already. It's just a matter of presenting it to the legislature. Let Section D approve that and then move on. So the fiscal note to me is about $71,928 too high. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Rozier. Some people aren't near as optimistic about Section D as you are. Proponents of the bill. Proponents? Anybody online? Katya, I don't see anybody. Opponents?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, Beth McLaughlin for the Judicial Branch. The fiscal note on this bill is necessary for a couple of reasons. The bill requires that the Judicial Branch move from a six-program budget that's presented to you through House Bill 2 to a 26-program budget by adding a program for each of the district courts. The district courts have been managed as a single entity since you passed the state of substantive district courts in 2001. So we currently manage the district court budget as a single entity. There's very little discretion in that budget. 90% of it is salaries. The other 10% is largely outlined in Title III, Section 5, Part 901, which lists the kinds of things that we can pay. The reason that we manage that as a single budget is that the costs that are not related to personnel are variable. Judicial travel, jury fees, guardian ad litem expenses, evaluations for psychosexual sentencing. It varies across the state from district to district, so we have to manage that as a single pool. If this bill were to pass, we would have to set up 22 different programs for each district court, and then every time we had to move money between those 22 programs, we would have to process a budget change document through the budget office. Many of those, because some of the district courts are very small, are going to meet the threshold for going to the finance committee before we manage that money. So the additional FTE is not to provide you with information, but to actually, in the interim, move money around and comply with the budget change process. So the best example I can give you is we manage jury fees as part of that big district court budget. We haven't had a trial in Petroleum County for probably 15 years. Last year, Petroleum County had a two-week murder trial. There's a lot of expenses that come out of that murder trial. We paid that out of our variable budget. Under this bill, the 10th Judicial District, which contains Petroleum County, would not have a budget. We would have to pull it from somewhere else, and we'd have to do a budget change document that would then go to the budget office that would then go to your staff. So the amount of work that would be created in the interim by this is the reason for the fiscal note. We simply don't have the staff to manage more programs than are contained within DPHHS's budget. So we do need the additional FTE. I want to be clear, as I've told Speaker Regeer, we can provide any information right now without additional resources. Anything you want to know about travel, jury fees, any of those things we can do. We just can't manage the bureaucratic process of moving budget dollars around in the interim if you're making us budget in a 22-district system. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponents? Ms. Sassano.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Amy Sassano, S-A-S-S-A-N-O, from the Budget Office. I think Ms. McLaughlin categorized it appropriately. The dollars that, first off, I want to clarify that the District Court Council does not appropriate any money. Only the legislature appropriates dollars. So the District Court Council is allocating those variable costs that Ms. McLaughlin was talking about. But in a $43 million budget, we're talking about $1.5 million. The rest of the dollars are set for personnel and operating fixed costs within each of those courts. So we don't think that the bureaucracy that is created by this bill it outweighs the merits of the information that can be accessed other ways, and so we would oppose the bill.
Thank you. Further opponents of the bill? Seeing nobody online, any informational witnesses? Seeing none, questions from the committee. Speaker Regier, I'll have a quick question. So why didn't your bill just require them to report how they allocated the variable, the $1.5 million fund that they have? Are you curious to know something beyond that then?
Mr. Chair, to report, because it does. Like it changed. Right now we're appropriating for the entire district courts. We want to know, and the five council of judges does, and since it was brought up under 3-1-1602, the district court council shall administer state funding to district courts. So they are appropriating the money to district courts. We're appropriating the money to the district court council. They're dishing it out to the district courts. And all I'm saying is that should be brought before Section D. Section D says, yep, that's good.
Randy, thank you. Ms. McLaughlin, same question for you. We appropriate the money to the district, to the courts, and then the council says where it goes within your budget.
Mr. Chairman, that's not accurate. The money's appropriated to the judicial branch in Program 5, which is our district court budget. 90% of that is personal services costs, so it's the cost of judges, judicial staff, and youth court staff. That remaining percentage that is in the variable budget is outlined in 35901. We have very little discretion about what we spend money on, so they're not appropriating anything. The district court council could not say don't pay jury fees because you've said pay jury fees.
All right, I got it. Any other questions? Seeing none, Speaker, would you care to close on your bill?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. We got a little bit off into policy there, but once again, I think this is something that even if it does create a few budget change documents, I think this is the way it's supposed to be, that the legislature approves the money and then the exec follows through with it. So, Mr. Chair, thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you. This closes the hearing on House Bill 722. We'll open the hearing on House Bill 45. Representative Keenan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Bob Keenan, House District 10. House Bill 45 is a bill at the request of the Department of Public Health and Human Services to satisfy audit that defined charity care, community benefits, and all of that. It ended up being a good negotiation process between the Montana Hospital Association and the department, and the resulting bill meets everybody's approval, other than the fact that the legislature does not have a stamp or any enforcement or any teeth in the bill. That was contemplated in Public Health Committee with some amendments, but at this stage of the process, it was determined that this bill was good enough as it is. It's a good first step to define community benefits. Now, I think we're talking about the fiscal note, and you can see that the department put one FTE into this bill. I suspect that that'll be part of the negotiations in the next couple of weeks about all of the FTEs that are in the fiscal notes that gather up to the tune of, I think it's 85 and 24 and another 45 in, 80. There are a lot of FTEs and fiscal notes. But anyway, that'll be part of the negotiations. So that's what it is. I suspect that the Office of Inspector General Division within DPHHS will be handling this. There's rulemaking in here, so it's really a negotiation between the department and the 16 larger hospitals in the state. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Are there proponents for the bill? Proponents.
Good afternoon, Chairman S., members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kim Aiken, A-I-K-E-N. Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Public Health and Human Services, and just wanted to thank Representative Keenan for sponsoring House Bill 45. The department rises in support. This bill was brought forward at the request of the agency because of a recent audit, as Representative Keenan just indicated. On the fiscal note, the number of facilities required to report under this bill is significant and results in a request for an additional resource, the FTE, to review and inspect records submitted by healthcare facilities. While the type of information being reviewed was narrowed because of amendments, it doesn't alleviate the department's need to review, respond, and regularly assess whether facilities have established a community benefit policy. The fiscal note associated with this bill requests one compliance specialist to review current and future community benefit charity care plans. So just in closing, the House Bill 45 is a response, again, to legislative audit findings that audit was performed in 2020. This bill adds to policy the department already operates under and creates a need for an additional resource dedicated to insured monitoring and compliance.
Thank you, Ms. Aiken. Further proponents, Mr. Pressinger.
Chair S, members of the committee, Dwayne Pressinger, P-R-E-S-H-I-N-G-E-R, with the Montana Hospital Association, supporting the fiscal note and the need for the department to have the expertise for the compliance specialist for the analysis of the hospital information. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents, seeing none, seeing nobody online. Opponents, seeing none. Informational witnesses. Seeing none, questions from the committee? Seeing none, Representative, would you care to close on your bill?
Thank you very much. I close.
House Bill 45, hearing is closed. Vice Chair Glimm.
Mr. Chairman, I move to concur on House Bill 45, the one we just heard.
You've heard the motion. Any discussion? Seeing none, let's try a voice vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no.
Senator Bogner, Senator McGilvery vote aye by proxy.
Senator Morgeau and Lynch vote aye by proxy.
Motion carries unanimously. House Bill 45 has been concurred in. It will go to third reading. Let's do this one.
Mr. Chairman, I move to concur on House Bill 364. This was by Representative Knudsen, Act Revising Sanitation and Subdivision Act that we just heard. Mr. Chairman.
Any discussion on that bill?
Question.
Should we need a roll call? Roll call vote.
Vice Chair Glimm?
Yes.
Vice Chair Ellis?
Yes.
Senator Solomon?
Yes.
Senator McGilvery?
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Boldman?
Yes.
Senator Bartel?
Yes.
Senator Mandeville?
Yes.
Senator Morgeau?
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Lenz?
Aye.
Senator Lang?
Yes.
Senator Lynch?
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Bogner?
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Cuff?
Yes.
Senator Flowers?
No.
Senator Fuller?
Yes.
Senator Vance?
Yes.
Senator Pope?
Yes.
Senator Wellborn?
Yes.
Chairman Esp?
Yes.
18 votes yes, 1 vote no.
18-1. It sailed through finance and claims. It'll go to third reading. I think we can. Let me look here. We can probably come back at 3 and do the rest of them. Is there anything in here that anybody wants to try to amend? Because we got to do that now if you do. We kicked out a bill earlier. Does anybody want to? Senator Cuff, you got a motion on that.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I made a statement. I read the bill. I thought I knew. I liked the bill. But as I sat here rereading the fiscal note and the bill, I thought there's a few things we need to trim that we don't need to go into. I'd like to move for reconsideration on the bill that dealt with adding some diabetic diabetes training programs to our to the insurance policy, and I'd move that we reconsider our vote on that.
So, Senator Cuff, out of respect for you, I'll have this vote. I will just say that most of that's being done now, just not to the same level by most insurance providers, including apparently the self-insurance pool we have. So I'm happy to talk about it again, but I think that we maybe do that already to some level, not quite this level, but
all I'm saying is I voted yes on it. I'd like to change my vote to no, and maybe somebody else, all right. But I don't know.
So present only will do a roll call vote.
To reconsider our action on House Bill 612.
All right. Vice Chair Glenn.
Yes.
Vice Chair Ellis.
No.
Senator Solomon.
Yes.
Senator McGilvery.
Present and voting.
Present. Not present. Senator Boldman.
No.
Senator Bartel.
No.
Senator Mandeville.
No.
Senator Lenz.
Hi.
Oh, I didn't see him walking. Senator Morgeau.
Nay.
And Senator Lenz.
Hi.
Senator Lang.
Hi.
Senator Lynch.
Absent.
Oh. Senator Cuff.
No.
Senator Flowers.
No.
Senator Fuller.
Oh, sorry. No. Sorry, I was meant. What?
This is to reconsider, sir. Would you like to be a yes?
Yes, I would reconsider.
All right.
Senator Fuller.
No.
Senator Vance. Senator Pope. No. Senator Wellborn.
No.
Chairman Esp.
No.
I have 5 votes yes, 11 votes no.
Motion fails. So let's get back to the floor. We'll be back here around 3 o'clock whenever they release us from the floor. We'll have to do exec on the ones we have left, and if we get any others, we'll have to hear them and do them.
Mr. Chairman, we have the room so we can leave our stuff.
Yes, correct. We do. The Public Health will meet in room 303 on adjournment or on recess from the floor.